Blog Talk Radio.
Desert speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Well, for the last week, the news has not been about Iran, and we will get back to that news on Monday with International Prison Day or Prisoners Day, and I'll be doing a special tribute to Netta Sultan. So while the events here in America have preoccupied the news, we have been overwhelmed with the wickedness of humanity. We have been overwhelmed by the suffering of people, and we have been just shocked and horrified by 50 Americans gunned down. And we've looked back at this and tried to understand why. Could it have been prevented? What did we fail to do? Well, today on The Cross in the Desert, I'm going to take us to some of these events. We're going to hear from terrorism experts. We're going to hear from the presidential candidate Donald Trump. We're going to go inside the ER and hear from the doctors how they initially treated these victims. And then we're going to talk to the ex-wife, one of the first wives of the shooter, Omar Mateen, and what she knew way back then before he became radicalized. And we'll find out from one of his classmates the things he said about 9/11. But most importantly today, I got a special little tribute from Brett Baer, Fox News, on remembering the victims of this awful massacre, the worst massacre since 9/11. And then in the second half of the hour, I'm going to give us the biblical perspective on suffering and evil and try to get our thinking and our whole heart lean towards what the Bible says about what we have been facing this last week. And in that next half an hour, I'm going to be paying tribute to the Orlando victims and to one very special angel that I featured earlier this week, and I'm referring to Christina Grimmie. We're going to have a special time of honoring her. Her funeral is going to be tomorrow in New Jersey, and I'm sure there'll be thousands that will turn out. I know the burial is private, but I believe that the initial funeral before that may be open to select media. There was a special candlelight tribute to Christina earlier this week, and it was very touching and tearful, and I featured it on my Facebook page. So we have a lot to cover. What do we say about this terrorist attack? How do we put this in perspective? Well, Middle Eastern terror expert Sebastian Gorka, initially when this attack occurred, had words of wisdom of how we process this attack, and what he has to say is so important. Let's listen to Sebastian Gorka right now on the cross in the desert.
Maria, we need to stop using words like shocking. Nobody should be shocked. This is what they have been planning to do after Paris, after Brussels. Nobody should be surprised. Likewise, this isn't to be called a tragedy. This isn't an Amtrak train being derailed. This is part of the global jihadi strategy. It's not an accident. It is war against America. And lastly, please, please, I beg my colleagues in the U.S. government, we have to stop talking about this maybe being a hate crime. It's not a hate crime. It is part of an ideological military assault on the United States of America. We have arrested 101 people linked to ISIS on U.S. soil since the caliphate was declared. This attack in part was facilitated by the policies of this administration, President Obama and Secretary Clinton, that have allowed political correctness into the threat assessment. Today, I beg the White House, stop with the political correctness. We need to destroy this enemy before more innocent people, gay, straight, black, white, brown, yellow, are murdered on U.S. soil.
This is Sebastian Gorka putting everything into perspective and saying we have to call this what it is, radical Islam perpetuated by ISIS, and they have succeeded because of the policies of our government, because of the political correctness and the many things that have contributed to the deaths of innocent people living their hope and freedom right here in the United States. Now, early on in the campaign, presumptive presidential nominee Donald Trump already called for a temporary ban on radical Islam, and I want you to hear for the next 4 minutes his reaction to this terrorist attack, to this ideological attack, if you will, this assault on us. I want you to hear what Donald Trump has to say. We need to pay attention to what people that have insight are saying we should do in result of this attack. Let's listen to Donald Trump.
The bottom line is that the only reason the killer was in America in the first place was because we allowed his family to come here. We have a dysfunctional immigration system which does not permit us to know who we let into our country, and it does not permit us to protect our citizens properly. I called for a ban after San Bernardino and was met with great scorn and anger. But now, many years, and I have to say many years, but many are saying that I was right to do so, and although the pause is temporary, we must find out what is going on. We have to do it. It will be lifted, this ban, when and as a nation we're in a position to properly and perfectly screen these people coming into our country. When I'm elected, I will suspend immigration from areas of the world where there is a proven history of terrorism against the United States, Europe, or our allies, until we fully understand how to end these threats. We cannot continue to allow thousands upon thousands of people to pour into our country, many of whom have the same thought process as this savage killer. If we want to protect the quality of life for all Americans, women and children, gay and straight, Jews and Christians, and all people, then we need to tell the truth about radical Islam, and we need to do it now. The bottom line is that Hillary supports policies that bring the threat of radical Islam into America and allow it to grow overseas, and it is growing. In fact, Hillary Clinton's catastrophic immigration plan will bring vastly more radical Islamic immigration into this country, threatening not only our society, but our entire way of life. When it comes to radical Islamic terrorism, ignorance is not bliss. It's deadly, totally deadly. Each year, the United States permanently admits 100,000 immigrants from the Middle East and many more from Muslim countries outside of the Middle East. Our government has been admitting ever-growing numbers year after year without any effective plan for our own security. In fact, Clinton's State Department was in charge of admissions and the admission process for people applying to enter from overseas. Having learned nothing from these attacks, she now plans to massively increase admissions without a screening plan, including a 500% increase in Syrian refugees coming into our country. Tell me, how stupid is that? Hillary Clinton can never claim to be a friend of the gay community as long as she continues to support immigration policies that bring Islamic extremists to our country and who suppress women, gays, and anyone else who doesn't share their views or values. Clinton wants to allow radical Islamic terrorists to pour into our country. They enslave women and they murder gays. I don't want them in our country. Immigration is a privilege, and we should not let anyone into this country who doesn't support our communities, all of our communities, every single one of them. Ask yourself, who is really the friend of women and the LB and LGBT community? Donald Trump with actions or Hillary Clinton with her words? I will tell you who the better friend is, and someday I believe that will be proven out bigly.
That is presumptive presidential candidate Donald Trump with some words, some straightforward talk about Hillary Clinton. Let me tell you what about the Clinton Foundation. You know from the news and you know from me telling you right here on the cross in the desert that she, that is the Clinton Foundation, has accepted millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia, a society, the birthplace of Islam, press women. Just yesterday, there was a Twitter storm in support of Saudi women who have decided to go out and drive and film themselves driving, put it up on YouTube, and Honor Diaries sent me an email to support Saudi women, to put this up on your page as they're out there driving, take a picture of yourself, say, I support Saudi drivers, that is Saudi women. And so this is the country. This is the country that oppresses women, that puts a ban on women driving, and yet the Clinton Foundation takes millions of dollars to keep quiet, and they only pay women a substantial fee. Men are paid 38% more than women if you are working for the Clinton Foundation. How hypocritical. Well, what Donald Trump is saying is for our own good. He loves his country. He loves the American people. He's appalled by this massacre of the gays. And he is saying, in essence, if you support me and if you vote for me, I am one that supports the gay community. I will not let this happen ever again. And I support the rights of women. And he has the right solution, I believe, to the immigration deplorable situation. Those countries that are radical and are on a list of being radical should not be allowed whatsoever under any circumstances to immigrate into this country until this system is fleshed out and vetted out. Well, right now on the phone, I have a dear friend who lived through this tragedy, who the helicopters were above her house when this attack was taking place. And I want to bring to our program today, just for a couple of minutes, my dear friend, Patricia Arrington from Orlando, Florida. Well, welcome
Hello.
To the Cross in the Desert, Patricia. How are you doing, Patricia?
I'm fine. I'm just really sad at what's going on about, you know, in Orlando. There's been so much going on.
Well, you actually live near Orlando. Tell our listeners what you experienced as this attack and as this thing was happening.
I went to bed kind of late, so I was pretty tired on Saturday evening. And so I was sleeping pretty sound. And usually I don't wake up to noise, but I woke up to it sounded like a lot of helicopters. So I went out to see. You know, I could tell the difference between a plane and a helicopter.
Uh-huh.
And I go outside, and I didn't just see one. I seen several. and they were just flying in all kinds of different directions. And I couldn't figure that one out, except knowing that my hospital's in my town, so I knew one was landing there. And I said to myself, I said, oh, my goodness, something is really wrong. So,
Now, you were awakened by all of this. Yeah, you. This scared you. I mean, you were a sound sleeper, and this disrupted your sleep. What was the next thing you did when you saw all of this? What did you do? Did you turn on your TV, your cell phone? What did you do?
Yeah, I came into the house and turned on the TV, and I was kind of half asleep. So I wanted to know, but they didn't really tell us anything except that something happened at a bar. They didn't describe the bar. They didn't say where it was. I guess they were kind of, figuring things out at this time, because it was about 2:15 a.m. at this time. So it must have just had happened. But the helicopters were seemed like they were scattering all over the place, probably, hitting hospitals. So they probably took the less severity of the people with less life-threatening, situations, those helicopters probably came to my hospital near me. But the ORMC is probably about 15 miles from me, which is closer to where it happened.
Patricia,
yes.
You're right. Here we have this national massacre and slaughter. We hear about it in Paris, and then in San Bernardino, but now it's happening in the very neighborhood that you live. How do you react to that?
Well, by the grace of God, I'm not scared, but yes, it is very close to home. I feel like we have been warned because of our open borders, and we're not able to vet people that are coming in. There's not enough manpower for that, for sure.
Presumptive presidential candidate Donald Trump says those countries that are radical and that are on a watch list, those countries should not be permitted to allow immigrants to come into our country. You should put a temporary ban on those specific countries. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's got its good and its bad. Because there are some people that say, like on a no-fly zone, actually, I think Ted Kennedy was on one, and it took him forever to get off the watch list. I'm hearing stories that it could take up to 5 years to get off of a watch list, and these people have no reason to be on that. So it's like a kind of catch-22. I feel also it's just a I don't know how to explain it. I think if you start doing one thing, it's going to just lead into bigger things. They're also talking about war and taking away from our constitutional rights with that. I think there's a name for it. They will suspend the Constitution, and then I don't trust the regime that we have in our White House right now to give us our rights back if they do that. So it seems like everything's a catch-22 right now.
Yes, I agree that it has to be done properly, but I think that when you see 50 Americans massacred on one night, and then you go back in time to December when there were more than 20 in San Bernardino, and the list goes on and on, the safety of our nation has to be taken seriously, and our president is more mad at us for speaking out than he is about the terrorists and the people that followed an agenda and killed these gays in a nightclub.
I totally agree with you. And even when Obama comes out of office, I do agree with Trump on a few things. But I do not trust Hillary as far as this, because of what she's doing with these countries, she's giving to the very countries that are killing people over there.
Her policies. You're right.
Who's going to follow Obama's policies?
You're right.
Really cared about those people. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thank you so much, Patricia, for spending a little time with us today and explaining that incident and how it woke you up and kind of letting our listeners know that things are very tense and very volatile there. And our thoughts and prayers, Patricia, are with you and your family and all of the people of Florida, that hopefully from this evil we will find a way in God's grace to move forward.
Amen. Hopefully we could all find a common ground.
Amen. That is my good friend, Patricia Arrington, and she is a faithful listener to The Cross in the Desert, and I just wanted her to kind of tell you and talk to you about this tragedy and what it did to her and how it affected her. And thank you so much, Patricia, for being a guest on The Cross in the Desert. I want to take us right now inside of the ER and what that was like when they first were receiving victims. Let's listen.
Family's life just shattered by this act of evil and terror. 49 innocent people killed, murdered, 53 people injured, and right now at least 29 people are still in the hospital. Chief Trauma Surgeon for Orlando Regional Medical Center, Dr. Michael Cheatham, goes on the record. Nice to see you, sir. How serious are some of the injuries? Are some people not going to make it?
Well, luckily, many of the patients are doing very, very well. And I anticipate, actually, that the patients that we still have in the hospital are likely all to survive. We wouldn't have thought that yesterday morning with the terrible gunshot wounds that they sustained, but the patients are doing much better today.
When did you first hear about the shooting?
So I heard within a few minutes of the event. One of my partners, Dr. Chadwick Smith, who was on call in the hospital, called me up, and the entire phone call probably took maybe 7 seconds. He said, "I have 20 gunshot wounds. I need you," and hung up the phone and immediately drove in along with one of our other partners.
And so what did you do? What did you confront when you got there?
Chad was trying to handle about 15 gunshot wounds at that time. So my other partner and I took a quick look. We each took a patient upstairs to the operating room, and we made the decision at that point that we needed more manpower. We called in 3 additional surgeons, so we had 6 surgeons in the hospital operating within probably 45 minutes.
Where did you get the surgeons? Because I assume that a lot of them don't know how to do gunshot wounds. I mean, it's like, you know, when I practiced law, there's certain hospitals you went to for gunshot wounds and certain hospitals you didn't go for gunshot wounds.
Absolutely. Well, Orlando Regional Medical Center is the only level 1 trauma center in Central Florida. So we see sometimes 5-6 gunshot wounds a night. It's a regular occurrence. We don't see 44 gunshot wounds in a night.
Have you ever seen anything like this, anything remotely like that?
Nothing like this. We trained for such an event. We never expected to have it happen.
So how long were you at the hospital once you arrived, until you finally got some time to leave?
I got to the hospital yesterday morning, probably about 2:20 or so. I left to come here.
So you've been nonstop work?
Pretty much.
Your partner?
My partner, Joseph Ibrahim, the director of the trauma center, he and I were both there all night long, there today. Chadwick Smith is back on call again tonight.
I take it the gunshot. Do you have head injuries? I mean, really lasting debilitating injuries, those who survive?
That's typically the case. In this situation, what we've identified is that the patients who received gunshot wounds to the head pretty much died in the club. What I think probably happened is that those victims that were shot elsewhere, chest, abdomen, extremities, managed to get out of the club as people were leaving, and they were able to be carried to the hospital. But those that sustained gunshot wounds to the head pretty much uniformly died.
How fast did they get to the hospital? Is the hospital close to the scene?
The hospital was only 3 blocks away.
Which helps.
Oh, it was tremendous. That is why we have had the excellent outcome, I think, that we have, is that patients got to us so quickly.
Doctor, thank you for joining us. I should add, he's on the board of Samaritan's Purse and does medical work for Samaritan's Purse, and so does his father, who I'm a great fan of. Anyway, nice to see you, sir.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, the doctors of Orlando Medical Center, Regional Medical Center, I believe, they're heroes. Absolutely. It was a war zone. And the phenomenal job that this hospital has done, I am in agreement that 3 blocks away was such a big factor in saving their lives. I think these men and women, and I work in a hospital, I know they're heroes. They responded in very extremely difficult circumstances, and it's because of them that there are not more people growing on the list of fatalities. They have done an outstanding job. What about Omar Mateen? this evil human being. I want you to hear what the ex-wife of Omar Mateen had to say about their relationship right now on the cross in the desert.
Ex-wife Satora Yousafi, and Satora, thank you very much for being with me tonight. What went through your mind when you heard the man you had been married to, your ex-husband, was the shooter?
Shock, to say the least. I was shocked. I really couldn't believe it.
Could you believe he would ever do something like this, Satora?
No. No. Not from the time that I was with him. Because this is too huge.
When you think in your head, Satora, about what happened, in the brief time that you knew him, you were husband and wife. His family has said he was not religious. People around the nation, people around the world, the grieving families, they are all desperate to hear what could have caused him to do this. What do you think it was?
Well, you know, our marriage, I mean, my experience with him was, in the beginning, a normal relationship. He was normal. He was funny, joking, very open. After we married, after about a month of marriage, he began showing another side of himself that I had never seen before. He had confessed to me that he used steroids before and at that time had stopped. And after that, I started noticing his emotional instability, that he would get angry. One minute he would be fine and another minute he would be really angry, violent, and would have his fists clenched. And in the beginning I thought maybe it was just that, and that was just a part of his personality, and, you know, he's just a very difficult person. But then these incidents began evolving into physical abuse towards me, and so, you know, the reason why I was actually rescued is because we saw that he was not stable as a person to be with another person, because he was abusing me. And, you know, that just shows somebody's instability, somebody's disturbance within themselves. I don't know any healthy or balanced person that would want to abuse another being, much less their loved one. So for me, that's the only, you know, relation that I see, is that instability, the mental illness that was already evident back 7-8 years ago, that just evolved to this insanity.
Satora, the Orlando Sentinel reports that he visited the nightclub Pulse, where we are tonight, at least a dozen times. Why do you think he was going there regularly to a gay club?
Well, you know, when we had gotten married, he confessed to me about his past that was recent at that time, and that he very much enjoyed going to clubs and the nightlife, and there was a lot of pictures of him. So, you know, I feel like it's a side of him or a part of him that he lived but probably didn't want everybody to know about.
Do you think he was gay?
I don't know. He never personally or, you know, physically made any indication while we were together of that. But he did feel very strongly about homosexuality.
What do you say to the victims, to the families who have so tragically had their lives changed completely, people who have lost their lives?
You know, in the beginning, when I first heard this story, this news, it was really difficult for me, and I couldn't stop crying, because more than anything, that's what I felt. The pain, the intensity, and the questions that are going on from all the loved ones, all the families of the victims. And it took a lot but I knew that if I would share my experience and maybe share some light and some insight to them, knowing and trying to understand why anybody would do this, then maybe it could help their healing process, because I feel for all of you, and I pray every day for all the souls that are transitioning and everybody that is healing.
Satora, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And there you heard it from the wife, the ex-wife, that is, one of the first wives of Omar Mateen, as she is trying to reach out to these victims' families and offer her condolences and sympathies. His lifestyle, amazingly incredible. What's the word I'm looking for? Contradictory? So this man goes out and slaughters people at a gay bar, but he had been a constant customer there at least a dozen times. And there is some very twistedness in this man's thinking. To be a patron, to be someone who goes there, and then to turn on them and slaughter them like that. It's the twisted thinking that you can't put your hands around. You can't seem to process how someone can be that way, can be so evil and twisted. Well, prior to this, several years before this, according to one of his high school classmates, he had some very strong views on 9/11. Let's listen right now to the cross in the desert.
Well, he was all right until, like, when 9/11 happened, he started acting, like, totally different.
Okay, when 9/11 happened, you guys were in school?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you went to high school together. How did he change after 9/11?
Well, I was in ninth grade, and I think he was a junior or a sophomore. And, like, I mean, on 9/11, when it happened that exact day, he was started, like, on the school bus. He was making, like, playing noises, and he would act like he would hit a building and stuff. He would do that for a couple of days in a row, and then it was, like, 2 or 3 days after that, a bunch of the kids on the bus were going to have, like, they were going to fight him because of it. And then I think, like, after that, he got expelled, had to go to a secondary school because of that.
You mean, wait a minute, James. You mean that Omar Mateen was removed from your high school because of his 9/11 comments?
Yes, yeah. It wasn't even just on the bus. He had comments in classes and other things. Like, I wasn't in the classes with him, but I talked to some people today, and they were informing me of things that he had said in their classes with him. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the reasons he got put into a private school or a secondary school.
All right, well, we're certainly going to look into that. So you're saying he got expelled in high school because of his, you know, is it his empathy with the bomber, with the terrorists on 9/11? Or specifically did he say?
No, he was like excited. Like when one of the people told me today that when the second plane hit the tower on the news, like he started praising, like, Allah, or started jumping on it up and down, and was real excited about it for some reason.
And
like, apparently,
did you ever speak to him about it?
Nah, when it happened, like I said, we were cool before that, and then when that happened, when he started changing that day on the bus, and I never spoke to him again, like, about anything like that.
Okay, and did he ever say anything about Osama bin Laden?
To somebody else, yes. He was in when he was in that other school, they were in class, and he, like, stood up and told everybody that his uncle was Osama bin Laden, and he about got jumped in the class by almost the whole class. They had to call the cops and escort him out of the school.
James, based on what you're saying, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, signals that were coming even from the time that he was in high school.
Yes.
All right.
But see, what was crazy is when he was at the mall, he was totally a different person. Like, I spoke to people that were like, well, after that, when he worked at the mall, he was a regular, like, a cool regular guy, but I guess people can hide who they really are.
All right. James Zirkle, thanks so much for being with us this evening.
Yes, ma'am.
So at the time that he was in high school, Omar already had these feelings and convictions, already praising the terrorists for what they had done. A very, very big red flag of what was to come. And how so important, so very important, that we don't miss these red flags. Because if we do, that's why we have tragedies. And we have to really, really, really do all of our best to report people like this, because the whole idea of preventing tragedies in light of what has happened is just unfathomably important, very, very important. Can't get the words out today, but how important it is to make sure we don't miss the red flags. It can save the lives of thousands of people. But this is Omar's twisted background, and already as a young teenager, praising the terrorists who slammed the planes into the World Trade Center. Just unthinkable. In all of this that we've talked about today, I don't want us to miss and forget to put on display these horrible victims that lost their lives one early Sunday morning at this nightclub. And so I want you to hear this very special short report by Brett Baer of Fox News, remembering the victims. Let's listen.
Finally tonight, after a horrific attack like the one that took place in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, it's often, as it was today, the terrorist or the shooter who is the focus of media attention as motive and impact are explored. But it's the victims, those still injured in the hospital, the men and women who were killed, and the families and friends they leave behind who cannot be forgotten. The victims this time range from 18 to 50 years old. One was a Starbucks barista. Another worked at the Harry Potter Park at Universal Studios. There was a restaurant manager, a pharmacy technician, an accountant, a bouncer, and a bartender. The list sadly goes on with 42 others. Thanks to the first responders, to the SWAT team that stormed that building, allowing dozens huddled in a bathroom to escape, and to the medical personnel on scene and in area hospitals who saved lives. Glimpses of the good as well in Florida as hundreds lined up to donate blood when a local donation center put out an urgent call. Thank you for inviting us into your home tonight. That's it for this special report. Fair, balanced, and still unafraid.
And thank you, Brett Baer, Fox News, for putting everything in perspective for us, helping us to remember the first responders, the police, and the victims, most importantly, whose lives were cruelly taken from us by a madman. In the midst of all of this tragedy, we who are Christians know where to go to get the perspective on all of this. As we are overwhelmed by evil in our world, sometimes that evil is so obvious, and other times it's very subtle, but this obviously was very obvious. The taking of human lives, the senseless tragedy, how do we process that? What should our reaction be? What word of encouragement and admonition, what word of hope can we give a world that is broken over this tragedy? And there are many things in the Bible that we can look at and read to give us comfort and to give us hope in the midst of this sorrow. And one of those places that I went to right away when I heard about this was Psalm 37, because I believe that this psalm is very, very comforting in a time of very chaotic conditions. And it's an admonition to us who are believers of how we should process what took place. It's a psalm of David, and I want you to hear the words. They speak for themselves. Don't worry about the wicked, or envy those who do wrong. For like grass, they will soon fade away. Like spring flowers, they soon wither. Trust in the Lord and do good. Then you will live safely in the land and prosper. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him, and he will help you. He will make your innocence radiate like the dawn, and the justice of your cause will shine like the noonday sun. Be still in the presence of the Lord, and wait patiently for him to act. Don't worry about evil people who prosper, or fret, get schemes. Stop being angry. turn from your rage. Do not lose your temper. It only leads to harm. For the wicked will be destroyed, but those who trust in the Lord will possess the land. Soon the wicked will disappear. Though you look for them, they will be gone. And the lowly, that is the meek, shall inherit the earth. God invites us to sit in his presence now and hear what he has to say about this evil. Revelation chapter 21. John records in this incredible vision, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared. And the sea was also gone, and I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, 'Look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever.' And the one sitting on the throne said, 'Look, I am making everything new.' And then he said to me, 'Write this down, for what I tell you is trustworthy and true. It is finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To all who are thirsty, I will give freely from the springs of the water of life.'" God says one day, not only will he wipe away all the tears of sorrow from our eyes, but he says there will be no more death, or sorrow, or crying, or pain. There is coming a day of recompense, a day of new beginnings, a day of new creation, a day when our hope and our faith is fully realized as we see God face to face. He promises to wipe these tears away. He says no more death, no more crying, no more pain, because ultimately he is in control. When we see chaos around us, he is with us and he is in control. In this horrible tragedy, in fact, on a very late Friday evening, the world had to say goodbye to an angel, a blessed soul whose voice radiated all over YouTube, whose voice and image could be seen on a program called The Voice, whose beautiful, beautiful presence gripped our hearts with wonderful vocals. Her name was Christina Grimmie. And I want to read to you this morning from my dear friend Teresa this beautiful tribute to Christina, who was a very strong, committed Christian. "Dear friends, this is a tribute to a young woman who didn't let fame diminish the light of Jesus in her life. Christina Grimmie grew in her faith, and the light of Jesus radiated from not only to the people she met, but to all who heard her voice, read her blog, or had any other contact with her. I heard that even a momentary contact with her left people with something special that couldn't be forgotten. Her death at age 22 is tragic, to say the least. Christina said that the song In Christ Alone was her favorite song. She overcame her shyness and was bold in her faith. In the secular music world, she was a light in the darkness. Christina had the authentic Jesus. The light of Jesus in her drew people to listen. She had found the unique qualities that God created in her. She used those gifts for her glory. Christina lived up to the meaning of her name, anointed follower of Christ. The light that she had in her life will live on. And the lyrics to the song Fly by Celine Dion are very fitting in our thoughts of Christina. Quote, "Fly, fly, little wing, fly beyond imagining, the softest cloud, the whitest dove, upon the wind of heaven's love. Past the planets and the stars, leave this lonely world of ours, escape the sorrow and the pain, and fly again. Fly, fly, precious one, your endless journey has begun. Take your gentle happiness, far too beautiful for this. Cross over to the other shore, there is peace forevermore. But hold this memory bittersweet until we meet. Fly, fly, do not fear. Don't waste a breath, don't shed a tear. Your heart is pure, your soul is free. Be on your way, don't wait for me. Across the universe you'll climb, on beyond the hands of time. The moon will rise, the sun will set, but I won't forget. Fly, fly, little wing, fly where only angels sing. Fly away, the time is right. Go now, find the light. Christina gave her life for being a follower of Jesus. The light from her life will never be hidden. 12 says, I am the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life. I want you to hear a very special fitting song that I just read to you, sung by the incomparable Celine Dion. This is entitled Fly, and it's dedicated to you, Christina.
Fly, little wing, fly beyond the matchless, the softest cloud, the whitest star, on the wind of heaven's love, past the planets and the stars, leave this lonely world of ours, escape the sorrow and the pain, and fly again. Fly, fly, precious one, your endless journey has begun. Take your gentle happiness, far too beautiful for this. Cross over to the other shore, there's a peace forevermore. Hold this memory bittersweet until we meet. Fly, fly, do not fear. Don't waste your breath, don't shed a tear. Your heart is pure, your soul is free. Be on your way, don't wait for me. Both of you on the first you climb. But I won't forget.
Song. There are no words that I can add to that beauty, a tribute to all of the dear innocent victims, to Christina Grimmie. Do you know, just recently Celine Dion had to say goodbye to her husband Rene, who was a victim of cancer. And so I'm sure that that song has great, great meaning to her as well. As we see how quickly life can be taken from us, and we look around us and we see tragedy, and the people that we love can be so quickly snatched from us by evil circumstances, what is life James writes, it's like a vapor. Our lives are like a vapor. They're here, and then they're suddenly gone. And we don't know about tomorrow. We don't know what exactly tomorrow will bring. But God's word says something very, very poignant to us, very direct to us, in the midst of this evil. And I read it to you earlier. God says, don't worry about the wicked. Don't envy those who do wrong as if somehow they will prosper and succeed. God says, look at the grass, how soon it fades away, like spring flowers that wither. They will be gone. And instead, God says, turn your attention to me. Trust in me. Do what is right. And as a result, you're going to live safely and you're going to prosper. Commit everything to me, God says. Trust me, I will help you. And be still in my presence. Don't pay attention to evil people. Don't be angry. Turn from your rage. And that anger is self-destructive, he says. And then he reiterates again, he promises, the wicked will be destroyed. Soon they will disappear. And the righteous, the meek, shall inherit the earth. The meek shall inherit the earth, the teachable, the humble. That new heavens and earth is coming down to us one day. And God's promise is not just something to comfort us, something trite to say, to help us through our difficulty. It is a solemn oath, and it is a promise from him. He will do these things. He will wipe our tears away. And then he says, there is coming a day when death will be finally destroyed, and sorrow and pain will be no more. And then he says, look, what I tell you is trustworthy and true. You know, if you're like me and you see evil all around you, times very hard to hang on and trust in these promises. We become so overwhelmed that we lose touch with the real reality, and that is the promises of God. But yet that is where our focus has to be, is on his promises for his people. What this tragedy says to me, I think, and it says to all of us, is how quickly our lives, like a vapor, can come to an end. And what that means very simply is this. Come to Jesus. If you have been thinking, considering, debating within yourself, wondering, hoping, instead, come to Jesus. He is the way, the truth, and the life. You don't know what will happen to you in the next few seconds, few hours, few days. The Bible says today is the day of salvation. Don't put that very important decision off. Come to Jesus. He is our only hope. He says, if you're lost, I am the way. If you are confused, I am the truth. And if your life is broken, I will give you life and life abundantly. Jesus promises to wipe all of our shame and guilt away and to give us his love, peace, and his forgiveness. Only then, when you have received him into your heart as Lord and Savior, only then can you have this hope that I've been talking to you about today. Only then can you take these promises I've been sharing with you and take them to your heart as true when you know him. Jesus says, come to me, you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. This night of hell in Orlando, how do we move forward? We move forward by coming to Jesus and trusting in him, committing our lives to him, and knowing that he has a plan and a purpose for our life and that he is in control. He is the only true foundation. And if I've spoken to your heart today, all you need to do is to ask him, that is Jesus, into your heart, right where you're at. And your whole life will be changed. And you will have those promises I've spoke to you about as a reality now. My program is speaking hope and freedom to Iranians, to Muslims, to everyone. He is my foundation. He is my hope. He is my refuge in the midst of chaos and evil. And Jesus can be yours as well too. So my prayer for you today, in everything that you've seen in the news and you feel in your heart, come to Jesus. He will give you a new heart and a new spirit. And he will give you the hope and the assurance that I've been speaking to you about today. I want to leave you right now with a song about what I've been talking about. It's by Hillsong. It's entitled, Jesus, I Need You. Thank you so much for joining me on this very special broadcast today in tribute to the victims of Orlando and to Christina Grimmie. I will see you Monday once again on the cross in the desert. God bless every one of you and have a wonderful weekend.